Welcome to the mayhem. Dick and Lloyd mayhem. Media mayhem. Marketing mayhem. You might love it, you might hate it. It's my favorite freaking show.
Hey, welcome everybody. Glad you're here. Is there a man in Kansas City who is all of these things? Architect, rancher, pilot, industrial designer, and inventor who invents things that astronauts use in space. And has a cozy office on the plaza. Why, yes, there is. And we'll discover his fascinating story here with Dick and Lloyd's Media and Marketing Mayhem. Hey, Lloyd, here we go. You know, one thing I like about doing this is that we like to dig into Kansas City and find people that have done phenomenal things here that not a lot of people know about.
You're right about that. We find some really intriguing characters right here in Kansas City.
Well, where are we now and who have we found?
We are at the coolest place. We're up on the second floor of the office on the plaza of a mad inventor.
Above the Boer statue.
That's right.
Yes,
we're looking down on all the action here, and we're with Paul Francis, who is a very successful local man who is an inventor, among other things, and we're going to talk about a lot of that stuff.
Right.
He's got some great stories for
us. Hey, Paul, thanks for having us in.
It's great to be with y'all, and you know, I first met Loy when we were playing baseball in junior high school.
Oh, really? Oh, my God. Yeah, I apologize for that.
You were playing baseball. I was warming the bench.
Let's start off first, but give us just a little background of who you are.
Oh, gosh. Well, I went to college as an architect, and then after I worked for some architectural firms for a while, I decided to become an inventor. And I was jogging around the area by Troost. I was living at in Hyde Park, and I thought, you know, it's kind of dangerous over here. Maybe someone should invent a personal security device. And, so my first invention was called the Buddy System, and it was a little alarm that you clip on your jogging shorts, and if you pulled a grenade pin out of it, a light would flash and a loud buzzer would go off. And then if you traveled, you could screw a little intrusion alarm on top of it and stick it over the hotel room door. So it became an intrusion alarm.
Okay.
And then I even invented a smoke detector that attached to it. So you had this kind of a buildable system from a personal security device to a travel security device. And so that got me on the road to inventing, and I ended up doing an agreement with Con Air, the personal care company. Then we got tied up having to get a nuclear regulatory license for the ion chamber and the smoke detector, and it became pretty expensive.
Yeah, that kills most of my ideas.
Yeah. You know, he kind
nothing
of
like the regulators.
He kind of went over my head when it was pull the pin on the grenade thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, so well, now, were you in the basement with a white lab coat? I mean, what was the deal on this, huh?
On that, yeah, I you know, my mother then passed away, and I moved in the basement at my dad's house to kind of keep him company.
Yeah.
And so we had a Weimaraner, so she was like my secretary, and had a phone and an old metal desk, and was drawing and designing because I was an architect, so I could, you know, create these ideas on paper. And then I was taking them around to different, you know, companies that supposedly, you know, would take your invention and market it for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
And, that's the caveman guy with the, you know.
Those guys,
wheel.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
I mean, that's something to avoid, right?
Yeah, it's a total ripoff. Basically, they just want fees from you.
Sure.
So, hey, that's a great idea. Okay, here, we'll do some patent searching for you. That's $1,000.
Oh.
Okay, we're going to apply for a patent. That's, you know, a few thousand. We're
going
to put a brochure together to send out to industry. That's, you know.
Well, our listeners are going to hear somebody who's been down the road and really done it.
Yeah.
About the patents and the whole deal here in a few minutes.
Wow.
But go on, Paul.
Yeah.
So now we're in Dad's basement.
Yeah. So we're
Kansas
working
City.
Away down there. And
and you got your secretary, the Weimaraner.
Yeah.
And that whole harassment suit's in your past.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
With the
all
secretary.
That. Yeah. All that's behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then, you know, of course, you got to do focus groups. You got to, you know, get a patent. You got to do all this, you know, and you got to build a prototype. And so, you know, money out the door. And it's like, man, you know, where does it all end? You know, how do I end up with a product that can actually get on the market? So, yeah, you know, I kind of got a PhD in product development. And ended up with this agreement with Con Air, and then it kind of fell apart. So the product never went anywhere.
Yeah.
But I did, you know, learn everything you needed to know about inventing a new, you know, a product.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And of course, you know, most things in life, you got to get experience and have a number of failures to understand, you know, what it's all about, and then hopefully you can stay in the game long enough to have success.
Now, Con Air, that was the hair dryer company.
they made
personal appliances.
Yeah, the guy that Lee Rizzuto is the chairman, and his mother had a beauty salon in Queens. And before then, they had all these, you know, heavy metal professional blow dryers.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he took that over to, Italy and got it an injection molded plastic version, lower cost, and started selling it to the beauty salons. And then consumers started buying it. Then that movie Shampoo came out with Warren Beatty
yeah.
with it in his back pocket on his motorcycle, driving up to all these beautiful gals' places and doing their hair. So then everyone had to have blow-dried hair.
Okay.
And Con Air went nuts. And then they became a, you know, a personal care company, and they were a pretty big going concern at the time.
And somehow, what was your part in that?
I had invented this product called the Buddy System that was a personal security device.
Right.
And they were in personal care.
Okay.
So they thought it kind of fit in their distribution channels.
I see. Okay.
How did they find you?
I found them. I mean, I was, you know, going to all these trade shows. So like in Chicago, there's the houseware show. It's the biggest trade show, I don't know, maybe in the
so
world.
So you were taking the prototype of the Buddy System to the trade show.
Yeah. So I would walk around and I'd go into booths and so I'd say, well, who's the, you know, president, whatever. And they, oh, that guy over there talking to that guy. So then when the guy was through talking to somebody, I'd turn around, I'd go, hey, and I'd have a little brochure or prototype or something.
Yeah.
And half the time they go, you know, what the hell, you know, get out of, you know, they'd spin around their heels and walk away.
Mm, yeah.
But that's how I did, you know, all the big deals I've ever done just about have been through trade shows.
Okay.
Walking in people's booths.
Now that's an important point there. It takes shoe leather. I mean, you got to have the moxie to pick up the phone, ring the doorbell, go to the trade show. That's the part that everybody thinks the caveman on the chair company's
going
do it for you. But
it's... People think, oh, I've got this great idea. If I could just give it to the right person or company, they'll run with it, and I can make all this money.
That idea is about 1% of it, isn't
it? Right. Yeah, yeah. What Edison said, what inspiration is 1%, and it was 99% perspiration.
That's
so,
right.
You know, you got to not only have something that people want, but you got to be able to make it at the right price. It has to work. It's got to be, you know, good quality and... you know, and no one's going to offer you any money for it until they see all those
things
happening.
Now, I was fascinated when Loy mentioned this, but it reminded me of the guy on The Big Bang Theory, Howard, who had the toilet that was invented that was used on the space station.
Huh.
Now, you have something somewhat like that experience, right?
Yeah, that was, you know, again, I was, you know... I thought, well, boy, if you could come up with a portable gym that would duplicate the benefits of free weights, you know, be great. So I went through all this prototype development and had got some funding and some deals done with some consumer product companies, but they didn't really, you know, move ahead with it, and it kind of got back in my court.
Mm-hmm.
And by then I had these power springs I was using that were breaking under life cycle, so I had to come up with a new way to create torsional resistance. And so I created a spiral molded shape out of this proprietary elastomer, and I called it Spiroflex. Mm-hmm. I built some more prototypes. And then I read an article. I was in a coffee shop, and the medical director of NASA, Roger Billicka, was saying, well, you know, we've got these astronauts coming back from the Russian Mir space station losing all this bone and muscle mass because you're in zero G, so it's like you're bedridden, you know,
and
your body just atrophies very quickly because you weigh zero. You're just floating up there. And on Earth, you know, you've got your body weight at least to move around with that keeps your bones and muscles, you know.
That's
somewhere.
How I stay in shape.
Yeah,
like Lloyd, just that's moving his around, secret to... From bar to bar,
So... I was able to contact him and said, hey, I think I've got a solution, you know, like, oh yeah, right. You know, and, well, I'm going to be around, you know, NASA, drop by, you know, I'm going to be down there in a couple, you know, down in Houston. So they had me in some little side room, and during lunch, a couple engineers came in and kind of pulled down this, you know, cable. And the next day they called me and said, hey, you can come back and do a full presentation in, you know, 48 hours. So I came back and they had a room full of engineers and astronauts and flight surgeons, you know, three deep around some, you know, carousel.
How old were you at this point?
This was like 98, you know, 97, 98.
18
years
some.
Old. Yeah. no, I was, you know, in my 40s.
Okay.
And, you know, at the end of the meeting, they said, you know, we think we want to fly this, which means, you know, we want to put this up on the, in space. And they were building the space station at the time, the most expensive man-made thing in the world. You know, it's like $100 billion now.
And was your thought at that time, oh my God, now I've got to make this actually happen?
Yeah, right.
Now, yeah. I remember this was many years in development.
Yeah.
Because I think some of your partners had an exclusive on the thing, and then they kind of sat on it and they gave it up, and that's when you were able, I say able, you probably weren't too happy about it at the time, but you regained control of this.
Right, they walked away from it and paid me a little money, this consumer product company, and they funded some of the development.
And so then you're in front of all these scientists. And,
yeah.
And
the thing that the alternative they had was, they called it the yo-yo. It was like a spinning flywheel with a rope on it, and then you could do squats and things with it. But it was a real goofy thing from Switzerland. And they saw my technology, and they thought, wow, this is, you know. And I communicated and showed some studies of, you know, how it would duplicate the benefits of free weights.
Mm-hmm.
And they subsequently did their own studies and proved that also. And so then it was like a mission critical that we had to get this up on the space station before the first crew got up there.
Okay.
So they were assembling all the parts, you know, with space shuttles and everything. And So we developed a system that would work in space and provide up to 300 pounds of resistance for squats. And so it was the first resistive exercise device ever developed for space.
I'll be darned.
And we were on the space station for 10 years, and they'd work out an hour a day with it. And we've got an astronaut spokesperson now in our company, and he was commander of Expedition Number 10. And he worked out every day with it. And he said when he came back, he was actually stronger when he came back than when he left.
Did you have to try this out on one of those vomit trips in the plane? Or
They took it up on the vomit comet, the KC-135. And I got trained to go, and we were in the parabaric chamber. I forgot the name of it. But anyway, that's where they suck the air out, and you have an oxygen mask hanging down, and then you're taking a test. And then as you feel hypoxia, as you're going up in altitude, you're supposed to put your oxygen mask on and turn your oxygen on.
Okay.
But the unwritten game was the last one to put his mask on won.
Uh-huh.
And so it was between me and this gal that worked at NASA, and she beat me. But so I got trained, but I never got to go up on the KC-135.
Mm.
But they did fly the IRED. It was called the Interim Resistive Exercise Device. They did fly that a couple times on the IRED to test it, make sure it all worked.
Once it spent its 10 years up there, where did you take that invention to develop it into more of a commercialized thing for all of us?
Yeah, so right after, this was really moving along with NASA, then I went back to all the fitness companies I'd been knocking on doors. And I'd make
kind of got a little more credibility now.
Yeah. Now, you know, hey.
My invention went to space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, we got some additional shelf space.
You know?
Well, mine went to space.
Yeah.
Because I was telling Dick, if I invented something that went into outer space, I wouldn't be modest and matter of fact about it like you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
I'd be bragging about it at cocktail parties.
Yeah. Well, I don't get invited to any parties, so, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to go have to sing a song about
it. Let's, yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm thirsty.
Yeah, me too. Come on, let's go down to the employee lounge and get a drink.
Yeah, how about Paul? Isn't he something, man?
A lot of stories to tell.
That's so cool.
Yeah, sure is.
Yeah, imagine what it's like to actually invent something that goes up in the space station. I mean, I'd be using that in cocktail conversation, I'll guarantee you that.
I'll bet you would, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the guy's so modest.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't be. Well, you know, if I invented something that went up into the space station, it'd go something like this.
Test, test. I've got a really pretty face. My invention went to space.
You should see my real cool place.
My invention went to space.
I just settled quite a case.
My invention went to space.
I won the three-legged race.
My invention went to space.
I make a lovely bouillabaisse.
My invention went to space.
I wear my shoes without a lace.
My invention went to space.
I've been told I have great taste.
My invention went to space.
My boss tells me I can't be replaced.
My invention went to space.
I know that your intention is to talk with condescension about how much weight you're benching when you throw that in my face. And you're trying to get attention, bragging how you broke convention by investing all your pension in the latest techno craze. Now it's with some apprehension, but you're forcing me to mention I'm in a whole nother dimension, cause my invention went to space.
When I returned to Earth after using Spireflex technology almost every day over 6 months, I was physically stronger in every test.
My sales grew at a record pace.
My invention went to space.
I went without carbs for 90 days.
My invention went to space.
Don't make him throw it in your face, Ace. You ain't even in the chase. It's his invention. It don't went to space. I'm talking space. The final freaking front, freaking tier.
Space, the final frontier.
That's right, from the Country Club Plaza right here.
Paul, listen, what did it feel like? I mean, when you'd walk outside at night and you'd look up in the sky and you'd say, well, sometimes I don't feel like maybe I've really done anything in my career, and maybe I have feelings of illegitimacy and I'm just kind of a fraud. And you look up in the sky and go, oh, wait a minute. No, I'm not. My invention's in space.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but go ahead. Yeah, so like we were taking it. Yeah. We're knocking on the doors now. Yeah. Now you're Mr.
Right.
Space guy.
So now I'm back to these companies and all these name brand, you know, and I say, you know, this is up on the space station, or it's going to be up on the space station, and, you know, this is going to be a great marketing, and here, you know, and I've got some new designs of new ways to package this in, different kinds of fitness equipment that fits your market. And so I had two companies, Life Fitness, which is the number one commercial fitness, you know, equipment company in the world.
That's what you see when you go to the gym normally. A lot of Life Fitness products. Fitness.
They own Hammer Strength and Paramount, I think, and a bunch of them. Then I went to Bowflex, and they just acquired Nautilus, the consumer version of Nautilus. So they changed their name to Nautilus. And I went back to them. So it turned out they both really wanted the technology. And so I was able to, you know, they kind of, you know, were making offers back and forth. Mm-hmm. And obviously I knew that with Bowflex, that they, the power rods that they had before in the Bowflex revolution, Bowflex, you know, the original Bowflex, it's got those power rods. And the patents were running out, and they were looking for a new home gym. And so I felt like, you know, I had a pretty good shot to be the next infomercial.
Okay.
If I did a deal with those guys. And so, yeah, we subsequently got a deal together, then developed a new home gym called the Bowflex Revolution, powered by Spireflex, my technology. Mm-hmm.
Its time has come. The revolution is here. This is the Bowflex Revolution family. The original Bowflex Revolution, the machine that introduced the awesome power of Spireflex resistance. Bowflex Revolution home gyms define the cutting edge of home fitness.
And that had a great run, didn't it?
Yeah, And it's still out there. They're still doing great. I mean, it's done over $250 million in sales.
Wow! You know, so. And you only get about 2/3 of that.
Yeah, I only get 1 cent off every
Well, now, so you've been very successful with these products, and in the
well, those are the successful ones, and there's more unsuccessful.
Well, but. You know what? The learning path. That's what I think a lot of people are going to be interested in hearing about, because QVC was part of this path. The television marketing, you actually were on the air, hawking products that you were developing along the way. Let's talk about some of those products that you had, Paul.
The QVC, I was able to get on with this product called the Power Stroke Modular Tool System, and it had a lever arm, so it would take the force off your wrist, and you could use leverage of your forearm, and the heads would snap on for sanding, scrubbing, and ice scraping. And so I made up these injection tools out of steel to take in the factory and injection mold the plastic parts. And
you actually had to fund all those prototypes and everything
build all the prototypes, machine them out of blocks of plastic and test it, and then
now you got some advice early on from some of these incubators or something. Did you work with school, UMKC, or any of those things? Or?
Matter of fact, they used to have the first incubator in the Midwest, I think, was the Center for Business Innovation over here by UMKC.
Right. I thought you had had something to do with them.
Yeah, I was a tenant there.
Okay.
But they introduced me to maybe one or two investors.
Okay.
And, that I found, the rest, but so I got a minimal amount of investment to kind of keep things rolling along, and my investors in the company that had the Spireflex technology, they got about 15 times their money back, on their investment, so they were
Okay.
And so you're building these prototypes for the tools.
Yeah. So then you got to injection mold these plastic parts, because that's how you can get the cost down and have a, everything's made out of injection molded plastic, basically. And, but the tooling, you can spend tens and tens and thousands of dollars for the molds that go onto the injection molding machines. And so once you can get through that and get some parts and, get it all approved and go through the quality assurance process at like QVC, then they say, well, hey, we think this might be something interesting. So the first time I went out there, I was on three times in within 2 days for 10 minutes a time. And I did pretty well, so they had me back a couple of times to do that.
What was that like to go on there? What was the backstage and all this kind of stuff?
Yeah, at the time they had a Lazy Susan stage where they had three stages. And so you'd be on one quadrant setting up all your props while they were live on the other part of the quadrant. And the problem I had was I had to have all these props, like a bathtub with a ring around it. I had wood sheets that with paint that's blistered up to scrape off. I had mustard and ketchup on a countertop that I'd have to scrape off and scrub off. And had all these different props I'd have to prepare between each thing. And then, they give you a little bit of training, then you go on live, and, it's all about demonstration.
So they train you just one day and tell you about how you're going to appear on camera and show you and get you comfortable with it, or?
Yeah, back then it wasn't much training at all. I don't even think I had any training. But now, more recently, Nick Bolton, our fitness director, he's been on QVC a few times, and he actually went up there and spent, half a day with them in training with one of their hosts.
And this is for other products?
Yeah, this is for the fitness product.
Gym. So you're also on the air, your company is, but you use this this fitness guy, a personal trainer and model named Nick Bolton. He's a Kansas City guy, right?
Yeah, Nick Bolton, he's been on a lot of TV commercials, and he was in our first fitness shoot for our still photography when we did the first original OYO gym, 3 or 4 years ago.
Now that's OYO, that's On Your Own, that's your current company.
Yeah,
OYO.
OYO Fitness is my current company that uses the Spireflex technology I developed for NASA and Bowflex. And now it's in a portable gym called the OYO Personal Gym.
Okay.
And we've got TV commercials out there, and we're on, you know, Facebook ads.
Free weights are big, bulky, and can even injure you. Introducing the OYO Personal Gym, the proven way to transform your body with Spiroflex technology.
The OYO Personal Gym. This one piece of equipment provides the same benefits as all these weights. Using these lightweight flex packs.
Used by NASA astronauts on the space station, Spiroflex creates resistance without weights. And the OYO Gym's double flex activation provides two exercises in each movement, building a balanced body in less time. With the OYO Personal Gym, you can now fit fitness into your lifestyle.
Is there an OYO.com or something that people can look into? Or
the corporate site's OYOFitness.com.
OYOFitness.com.
Yeah, OYOFitness.com.
Okay. And then, I see you're on Facebook a lot and things, so how do people find you? What's the easiest way to find you?
To find us, you know, just, you know, Google OYO Gym, OYO Gym.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we've got a couple different sites out there. We just came out with a new site for kind of a direct marketing. It's like a simplified page, so people got to get through it quickly and decide whether they want to buy it or not. And
I saw you in a kind of a cool little video you made, a little short form YouTube video with you and your OYO airplane.
Yeah, so I didn't put any company money in it, but I did spend my own money to paint the airplane with the OYO logo on it.
Okay.
And, it needed a new paint job. So, I fly it around a little bit for fun. And I was coming back from Portland and was flying by Mount Hood. So I got a little video of Mount Hood there. And,
it's very cool. It's a cool logo. It's great branding that you have for that. So tell how is OYO doing? I hear you're selling them all over the world now.
Yeah, we just shipped a container to another one to Japan. The Japanese love it because it's so compact, and they like high-level engineering. Mm-hmm. And
they probably think it's a Japanese brand with that name.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of an Asian-sounding, you know.
Name. OYO.
And
this
is it, what we're looking at on the wall here, right?
There,
and
we'll
get a picture of that for our YouTube presentation.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
Dick, I'd like to get some video of you using
trying
that.
To use
maybe
that.
Doing some squats with that.
It looks to me like two microphones on on a bike handlebar.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone always kind of tries to relate to something new with something they've
known
before.
We'll get you in these leopard print leotards. Okay. Now, those look good on you.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we found some success on television, but more success, at least in the U.S., with Facebook advertising.
Mm-hmm. So Facebook works for you pretty well. Tell us about that. Yeah, everybody's interested in...
Yeah. I mean, Lori, you're a big advertising guy from way back, and you know about the whole movement from off of, you know, television to digital as far as, you know, advertising.
Sure. I was there for all that stuff.
Yeah.
Black and white to color, even. But go ahead.
So, but what Facebook enables us to do is target different audiences and test different ads against different audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever cost per acquisition, we need a certain cost per acquisition.
Right.
And if we can get that down, let's say it's, you know, $30 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If we can spend $30 on Facebook and make a sale for $150, then of course every $30 in, you make $120. Well, then you got to subtract out your cost of goods
right.
and other stuff. But so you keep testing different types of ads with the videos and the copy and the headlines against different audiences, and then whatever ones start to, you know, meet that cost per acquisition, then you focus in on those and then you scale your advertising. You know.
Now, are you working with a firm, or are you doing that in house, or how are you?
Kind of
a little bit
of both.
Testing.
I've got my COO, Graham Ripple, is really good at kind of managing that and understanding that. And but we do have a
is he a local?
Yeah, he's a local guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he used to have a company called Paleo Fit Meals that he ran for a while. And but he's a real smart guy, and so he's a real big help. And he. Kind of ran my Kickstarter program. We became the second highest funded Kickstarter fitness product in history.
Hmm.
And we're over $1 million now in crowdfunding purchases.
Wow.
And we've since, you know.
And that was only for OYO. That was just the most recent product.
Yeah.
You used
Kickstarter. Yeah, for the OYO Gym.
And then is this the first product line you've gone with Facebook on?
Yeah. This is really our first intro into the digital, Facebook.
Have you experimented with any other platforms or networks, social?
Yeah. The other ones, don't really do much. Instagram's got a little bit of life, but it's pretty much Facebook. And then, of course, Amazon. We've got a pretty big presence on Amazon. And there's a lot you've got to invest in advertising inside the Amazon system and bidding on keywords. And then you got to have a great page. And, it's just got to, all.
So you bid on the words you can have against someone else.
Yeah.
In your, I'll be darned. Yeah.
So it's very complicated, isn't it?
It makes my head explode because I'm more of a designer, inventor,
And, yeah. So you might, for super duper, you might bid, have to bid a little higher than the guy over across town, huh?
Yeah. Okay. Like we were bidding on home gyms on Amazon, and all of a sudden we're spending thousands of dollars because everybody's clicking on, home gyms, So we had to be a little more specific, obviously, personal gym, portable gym.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really complex.
Wow.
So you got to be pretty smart. We've got a good Amazon consultant, used to work there, is our Amazon consultant. So that helps a lot.
So advice to people out there with looking to expand the market share with their products, that Facebook still is a really important thing to look at. Even, a lot of the people say, all the younger people are going to
Instagram,
the other one,
Twitter,
Instagram.
Yeah.
But Facebook's still far and away the kingpin.
Yeah, it is. And older people, over 45, 55, a lot of them are on Facebook and they're on their desktops watching it, on a full-on, screen on their desktop.
And this is kind of interesting because one of the functions at this little private gym, it's a personal, very portable thing where you can sit at your desk, maybe get up next to your desk. You might be in a cubicle and you're not bothering anybody else. Nobody else knows you're in there having a workout.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you can basically run through, 40 or 50 different exercises.
Yeah, Nick Bolton, we've actually shot 197 exercise videos and they're up at oyofitness.com. And we have 60 workouts. And then we had a 10-week program that...
These are just things for at your desk, you mean?
No, this is for a total
body. This is for the big classes and things?
No, you can do all this at your desk.
Oh, okay.
If you had a chair and some place to stand, you can do 197 exercises.
Wow.
See, that's what's so cool about this is, they're telling you out there, sitting's the new smoking. You're going to die if you sit at your desk.
Exactly.
And I don't know if that's as... the big panic as it was like 3 or 4 years ago when you were first rolling this out, but my gosh.
Oh, it's a big, yeah.
It's people. Perfectly can prevent people from getting whatever that horrible thing is that happens when you sit at your desk.
Yeah, your body just, atrophies and, the human body was designed, to survive back, in whatever caveman times, you got to go out there and kill something and eat it and find a mate to procreate and, but now, to be successful, you just have to sit at a desk in front of a computer.
Yeah.
So your body isn't designed for that, so it's going to fall apart.
Now, have you invented anything for the procreation part yet? Still working on something on there? Or
no. Okay. I did have a consulting firm years ago that I would help inventors, and some lady came to me with a device that she wanted to get on the market. It was a female condom, but I...
Okay.
All right. That's an HSN QVC thing. That probably didn't sell well after the power stroke. Let's see, you had a massager. Let's talk about some of these other inventions that you did. And were they, were they all just kind of lessons along the way, or were any of them... really kind of, did you hit any doubles or triples out of that? Or was it all just kind of like leading up to the big invention that finally hit?
Yeah, kind of all the above. I mean, I'd start out with maybe, 50 product ideas, and then I'd do drawings on some of them, and then I would go to the patent depository or whatever you call it over here and at Linda Hall Library in the basement. You can look up all the patents. This is before you can go online and do it on Google. And then I would, figure out, what do I think is a really unique product that serves a unique need that I can still get a patent on? Because I didn't want
to... So you thought through that all yourself, and you just used common sense and logic and did some research, and you didn't go... to one of these patent attorneys and all that. Talk to me about, I mean, that is the most daunting thing. It's like the pinnacle of the complexity industry.
Yeah. People have, you know, what are the patents? In the old days, it was if you invented first and you could prove you invented first, then you could get a patent. Even if someone filed a patent ahead of you, if you could prove that you'd invented it first, you could get your patent, you know, approved. Now it's whoever patents first. Mm. They changed. It's more like a European style law. But yeah, where today, if someone wants to, you know, get a patent on, you can do a provisional patent. You can actually go online and do kind of a half-ass provisional patent, and it'll kind of, I believe, it'll pretty well protect your, you know, idea until you have enough money or decide to move ahead and have a patent attorney do a real, you know, full-on patent. And
so you still need a patent attorney to protect it once it's viable?
Yeah, I mean, if you really,
so
you know,
you're really just kind of doing a little CYA, Hail Mary, you know, hopefully this will hold up, and even though you really can't afford to defend it, right? I mean, I've heard people say that a patent is only as good
right.
as
exactly.
how much money you have to defend it.
Exactly.
And that the big boys can roll right over you and grab it from you. Hmm. And
well, you know, I don't know if they can do that, but, you know, if someone's out there with an idea and they go, oh, someone's going to, I can't tell anyone, I can't show anybody because they're going to steal it. Oh, here, sign this non-disclosure agreement and I'll show you my idea. It's like, you know, I'm probably working on 10 ideas, you know, similar. And if I sign this non-disclosure agreement, you're going to sue me because you're going to think I knocked your idea off.
Right.
When in reality, I was like a 10 years ahead of you on this mm-hmm. thing. So I'm not going to sign that. No one's going to sign it. So you got to show companies like I did, you know, without, you know, any protection, except what you might get under the patent laws. So I felt like I had a good patent position.
So you had patent pending, basically, when you're showing these things to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, and even and back then it was I knew I could prove I'd invented it first even before I got the patent, but usually I'd have the patent attorneys do a patent search. You know, if I each level you get into the thing, you still think it's viable, then you spend more money on your intellectual property. But at first, like today, if you have a great idea and you know you've done some work on it, have a prototype, and people think it's great, you could go out there and obviously research it and see what competitors are out there, and then do a patent search on Google, and then if something viable done an improvement, then mm-hmm. you could go on I think you could do it through the U.S. patent and trademark site, and you could file your own provisional patent by just writing up some stuff on
and
it.
You've done that before,
and,
right?
Yeah, I did that once, and uploading some photos and stuff
but
like that.
But then you found people that you were comfortable working with that didn't you didn't feel like you were getting gouged.
Then you keep going around. Then if some company goes, hey, you know, General Motors says, yeah, that's a great new carburetor that, you know, will save 10% gas. You know, yeah, we definitely would go with this thing. Do you have a patent on it? Yeah, I've got a professional patent. And they'd say, okay, well, look, we'll do a license deal with you, and we'll pay you X amount up front and pay you so much percentage. And you can use, you got to get then go to your attorney and get a patent, a real patent filed on that mm-hmm. thing that will be licensed to us that will protect us. So, and then at that point, hey, yeah, I've got the money. I'll go spend, you know, $7,000 and have a utility patent filed on my carburetor that saves 10% more gas because GM's ready to go with it. You know.
Well, now in Kansas City, can you think of any resources that stand out in your mind? That
to help inventors? Or
yeah. Is there anybody or, I mean, we maybe it's not appropriate to mention, but if there's somebody that you've got tattooed on your...
You know,
just because they've done a great job or whatever.
Yeah. The problem with helping inventors is usually inventors don't have any money mm-hmm. and they've got crazy ideas, mm-hmm. so nobody wants to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no viable business out there except, you know, these companies that want to take your money for fees to, you know, pretend like they're going to take your product to, you know, get it on the market.
Sure.
So that's the problem. The lawyers that are established, they really don't have time to...
Well, they're all happy to talk to you and they're great, you know, attorneys and everything, but they got to, you know, charge their hourly, you know.
And they're $400 or $500 and up an
Yeah,
hour,
they can
right?
be, yeah. And they're not going to go, hey, this is such a great idea, I'll go in on it with you and I'll take a percentage or take some stock. I mean, they've heard that one.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
They just want to bill out, you know, hours.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But they'll give you a quote on a patent. They'll go, oh, well, this, you know, I think you need this many claims. I think you need to get this many drawings. So I think it's going to be $4,000 to get this filed as a utility patent at the patent office. And they may hold, you know, to that, to the dollar. If you say, hey, look, okay, I'll do it for $4,000, you know.
So you're having to connect some dots and make some assumptions as far as what's the viability of this thing, and do I think I'll get companies interested in partnering with me on the manufacturing, and I'm going to have to put $20,000 into getting prototypes made, or
right?
You kind of, and then you look at all these different considerations. So you've got to be kind of a strategic visionary to be able to pull this off, because you're coordinating all these different risks.
Right, right. And you've got a 1 out of 100 chance to make money on your invention. You know, maybe it's a 1 or 2% chance.
What do you think the chance is that you'll invent something that winds up in space?
In space.
But you know, I probably invented 50 different things. So
tell me something that was
1% chance to be.
What
successful.
Was your worst idea?
Oh gosh.
Dick's always there trying to embarrass people.
Yeah,
the worst idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Was there anything you would have been embarrassed to produce and you just kind of shoved it in a back drawer and said, why did I even think of that?
Yeah. No, one cool thing that never got to the market was the palm dryer. So you'd have this sleeve that would go over your hand and go around your palm, and there was little holes at the bottom of it. And on top of it, there was a little fan and a heater. So it was like a little blow dryer on the back of your hand.
And below for sweaty palms.
Then below your palms, it would blow out the hot air. So you could run your fingers through your hair and dry it and style your hair with your fingers.
Oh.
And then you could snap on little combs onto it. So
I'll be darned.
It kind of gave you, because that's how I would dry my hair, is I could run my fingers through and kind of,
Yeah.
And so I had that thing, prototyped. I'd built, these custom working prototypes and everything, and took it to Con Air and all these companies. And then some guy had gotten a patent in the meantime.
We've got a guy outside with a palm dryer.
Yes, sir, do you want me to let him in?
No. No, I'm perfectly all right with my moist palms. In fact, I prefer them moist.
That's great. Gosh.
But yeah, a lot of failures, a lot of money down the drain.
Well, you, as a designer, I noticed you always had high design. That you got a great office, and I mean, you buy the stuff. You buy high design stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you like.
That's part of the architect you, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was an industrial designer too.
So you've had a lot of success, and you've got this cool office. How long have you been down here on the plaza in this cool office?
Oh gosh, about 20 since 92.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, I notice as we look out the window, the Shake Shack is right across the street from us here. Any exciting
that's
things going
add
on
to,
here
That's
got
to add
office?
To the action a little.
Tell the sniper where to set up over here. And
you were here the day that they had a little shake up at the Shake Shack, weren't you?
Yeah, I was sitting here and I heard 5 shots in rapid, fire, and I saw 4 or 5 guys with hoodies running away from the corner of Shake Shack.
Wow.
And they didn't have any carry-out food with them.
I guess not, but and the police, everybody came, but I don't think they found any bullet holes, so I don't know where they were shooting, because they didn't hit anything.
Well, that's some action, but you sure see a lot of people down here. This is a wonderful environment. Got a little wet bar here. It's a great place for an inventor to hang out. You got a few offices up here, don't you?
Yeah.
So, got an innovation center down the hall where you do some.
That's where Graham works in there, and we've got a little communication system where we can turn the big screen and do video conferencing.
Wow.
And,
cool. Yeah.
So, Paul Francis, what? There's so many things to talk about. You're a pilot, and you've done some interesting things. You got your own plane. You're on a ranch.
Yeah,
you're a rancher.
Yeah, I kind of tried to, I don't run my cattle anymore. I lease out the land now. But at first, I had my own
cattle. Did you eat your cattle or what?
No, it was you'd have to kind of ship them off to the feedlot for a
fatten them up.
Yeah,
give them some grain.
Now, where was the ranch located?
It's just a little about an hour west of Kansas City.
Oh, okay, all right, good.
And I've been out there. I've had it for 10 years now.
Yeah.
But yeah, we run cattle out there, and
what is it that makes it different from a farm? Is it the animals makes it a ranch,
I think,
and the corn makes it a farm?
I got to defer to you, Paul. What's the deal? You don't
I think
know.
It looks kettle. It sounds better. I think it's cooler to say ranch.
Ranch
than
sounds
farm,
better.
So
yeah, that's why you I know, say ranch. Ranch has a good feel about it. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all in the packaging and marketing. And, you know, and it's called Black Hat with the H, Black Hat Ranch.
Okay. All right.
And then you'll travel around the country to promote the product sometimes, or do trade shows, I guess, still.
For my
and you've got
for my stuff now for my
yeah for
products.
OYO.
Yeah. Yeah, we go.
Because I know you've got
shows.
One of those kind of mobile home type. I mean, it's a cool.
I've got a little van that you know you can sleep in. And,
mm-hmm.
I've put prototypes in there. Yeah, and traveled around and mm-hmm. Pull them out. And hey, look at this.
What's in your brain now rattling around? Any hints of what the next big thing might be? Or
you know,
everybody listening will not tell.
Yeah, yeah. Right. No.
Right.
Yes.
It's
yeah.
a verbal non-disclosure.
Yeah. Yes, please do not right. tell or take any ideas.
Do not okay. steal his right. ideas. Yeah. What's going on in the mind of the mad you know, inventor now?
And we have a product line at OYO Fitness of bigger and more you know, heavy-duty exercise devices that put out more resistance and do more things. So we've
using
got,
that Spyro, yeah, Spyro
yeah,
Flex.
Using the Spyro Flex technology. So we're going to put something up on Kickstarter probably in April, and this new version of the OYO Gym on steroids that puts out a lot more resistance and
okay.
You can do more things with. And then we've got a home gym that we'll be coming out with after
okay.
that.
Okay. Cool.
So. And it's all going to be under the OYO brand?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody ever propose a crazy idea to you?
One guy came to me with an idea for behind bars. He said, well, you know, you're in the shower. You don't want to use your bar of soap, you know, for your behind. So I thought I'd come out with a product called Behind Bars.
Okay.
And the packaging would show the soap behind these steel bars like it's in prison.
Right.
And kind of like the Pet Rock, you know, and Behind Bars. I got to get a trademark. We got to get on this right away.
Wow, this is gold. This is
I
gold.
Thought you were going with a kind of a different shaped soap.
Yeah.
A little triangle thing. You know. Yeah.
Problem the problem with yeah. that product is if you drop it, you can't pick it up.
Yeah.
Because that'll be a bad day for you.
You get sold in prison. Yeah.
Well, we've been talking to Paul Francis, Kansas City inventor with products all over the earth. And
in space.
That's right, in space. Thanks, Paul. What a great conversation, and continued luck on OYO. A great product line.
Well, thanks for having me. This has been an enjoyable experience. Now, can I have a drink?
Thank you, Paul. Great talk.
Well, that was fun. Yeah, okay. I enjoyed it. I didn't know we had that much fun.
Thanks again to inventor and all-around good guy Paul Francis. Check out his stuff and company at OYOFitness.com. Join us again when we find somebody else interesting to talk to. Loy, do the honor.
You might love it, you might hate it. It's my favorite freaking show.